Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. Hello, hello. Holly Puckering is in my line of sight. How are you?
Hi, Kathy. I'm very well. It's so good to see you.
I know. And when I asked how you really were, I sort of kind of got the, oh my gosh, it's so busy.
Yes, it is. It's extremely busy at the moment. But that's so positive because we know we're very lucky. We know it could be very different this year. And it has been for some of our friends. So we're grateful.
Yeah, so I've just got a million things to kind of chat with you about, but maybe kind of tell us where you are and what part of the world and what you get done, because I know that, but nobody else does just yet.
Well, I am the director of Mouthworks Therapy Centre. We are a Tasmanian, and now we actually have a few people interstate as well, Tasmanian and plus Victoria plus New South Wales, wide allied health multi-service. We basically deal with any client who walks through our door in community health, from birth right through to palliation and beyond, and you know, supporting families. We have such a diverse team. They include speech pathologists, OTs, dietitians, music therapists, allied health assistants, psychologists, and physiotherapists. So we've been on a fairly rapid growth trajectory whilst the business has been around for 10 years now. The last 5 years have seen quite a rapid growth stage. And my husband and I run the business. My husband has a background in business marketing and management. So it's a nice match between business skill and clinical knowledge.
Gosh, whilst you say growth has been, you know, solid in 5 years, I'd say it's probably been exponential in the last two.
Yes, particularly 2020. We read a lot and we discovered that there's a lot you can do during times of crisis, and that businesses that really commit and get it done, as you like to say, GSD, really do come out stronger. And I think that has been well and truly the case for us.
Yeah. I was working with a group of business owners last week and put to them that really to be the owner of an allied health business really is to have won the lottery in 2020. would love your thoughts on that.
It's not an easy lottery, Kathy.
It's not, but...
No, but it has great potential and great scope. Yeah. And I feel that we've been super lucky because the model that we've been trying to push for, we care very deeply about rural health, and we know that whilst our two centres are based in metro areas in Tasmania, we know that the bulk of our clients come from, you know, really quite isolated areas. You'll have to excuse the drumming and guitar and ukulele going on from our music therapist in the background. I can't mute it. we've just had such a hard time until 2020 pushing the model of practice that we wanted. And whilst we've been doing telehealth for the whole 10 years that we've been open, 10 years in January next year, we haven't had the uptake. We've struggled to get people to address, you know, their concerns about telehealth with us. We have had lack of engagement. We've had low, well, Tasmania has a very low level of technological and health literacy in our rural populations at times. And so it's been very, very challenging to get the model we wanted up and running until 2020 hit. And all of a sudden it became a preferred option to use a combination of telehealth and on-the-ground workforce. So it's been really good.
Yeah. So 2020 has kind of given you a boost. What can you tell us about your team right now? And then we'll get into kind of how you're doing things a bit differently.
Okay. There is so much I could tell you about my team. They're quite extraordinary.
There's over 50 of you nowadays.
There are, and growing. So next week we have two more psychologists starting with us. My team's focus from the very outset has been really pushing towards interdisciplinary care. You know, it's been something that we've struggled to find, you know, down here in Tasmania. And I remember when we moved to Tasmania, I remember driving with Steve, my husband, a business partner, in the car. And I remember saying to him, could you imagine one day if we could own our own practice and we could have everyone we needed to help clients? This was coming from a locum that had been less than interdisciplinary, shall I say, moving down here to start another locum, which, you know, has evolved into us never leaving Tasmania. So I think our team, the best thing I can tell you about them is that they have got so much respect for each other. There's so much support. Our biggest challenge has been to build an orientation program that really allows them to connect with other team members, particularly considering that we're so geographically far flung, and using technology to our advantage to connect people who literally, we have a speech pathologist in Victoria who only does telehealth for us with a combination of an allied health assistant on the ground. And we have an OT in New South Wales who does the same. So we will potentially never even meet these people. Yeah. So connecting them to the team has been challenging. But the biggest challenge that we've faced this year, we've had allied health assistants now for 2 years, but the biggest challenge has been to establish our allied health assistant team genuinely on equal footing as a department within our practice, and to build the respect they deserve for their skills into our clinicians' minds, which they have done and they've accepted, and it's been amazing. And now the power of that team is really quite exponential.
Yeah, it's interesting that I think what the pandemic has done is made us realise that geography is no excuse for not getting business done, team culture optimised, technology just is the glue. It still needs the human intention, but I sort of find it interesting when I hear from business owners, well, we're across three sites and we've got three cultures and, you know, it's hard to get everyone together. Yeah. I know that's, I just about break out in hives, but it's actually, the intention will breed the creativity and the solution.
Yeah. To be fair, we actually went through, when we opened our second site, we very quickly went through a practice manager because and had to move on and find someone else because they did not share that idea that it would be a statewide team. It was just not a good cultural fit. She was, you know, she was very upfront and okay with that, but she really wanted it to be a competition between the two sites and not a collaborative family. Big challenge.
Yeah, that's not... No, that, I can't imagine that working with you guys. So how what can you tell us about how the allied health, professionals work with the allied health assistant professionals?
Okay, so, we have developed clinical pathways which allow us to really well use our time and really well address the client's goals. So our practice is very, very goal-centered, person-centered care approach. And how we do it is we make sure that the clients get a visual of the clinical pathway that they're on and that the clinicians are well across all of the different options they have for providing treatment at appropriate stages and, I suppose, prescribing the appropriate point that the person can access treatment. So it might be that you come in, you have we're looking at an early childhood intervention pathway. You have some of your families come in. They might actually have the allied health assistant with them in the room, and the team dialing in from all around Tasmania to provide the screening and to provide the goal setting session, and then come up with a plan about how they're going to just tackle the treatment and which goal, which step of therapy comes first, who goes first, so we don't overwhelm everybody with five different therapists. And then when that happens, we can look at supporting somebody either with a block of tailored therapy that's been designed by a clinician and implemented by an allied health assistant, one-on-one with the therapist, a group, or potentially actually doing community work. So, you know, with the allied health assistant out in the community, with the clinician supporting as needed, either in person or by a telehealth link or programming. So there's multiple options, but they're well documented as a pathway. And I think that communication has been really quite crucial in developing our working model. We've also got two other really different ways that the allied health assistants work with clinicians. One way is to overcome the barrier to telehealth that a lot of clients feel. And that means that we have, right now, two doors over from me, we have our amazing speech pathologist in Victoria who has dialed into a session. She has a big screen TV on the wall in the therapy room with all these cool touch screen modalities that can be turned off. And she's got Jackie, one of our very experienced allied health assistants, delivering the therapy, being her hands with her guiding from the screen. So it's wonderful. We also use earbuds so that if, for example, Kath is commenting on what's going on with the client in front of her, she can get mum to put the earbuds in and hear her commentary while mum's observing what Jackie's doing with the client. So that's been quite tremendous. We've also been using our allied health assistants to overcome some of the barriers around service education and data provision and primary health education. So going and doing education modules in the community that have been designed by clinicians to help prep them for what our team can do and to also give them better access and better knowledge about the options available to them before they even hit the ground once they get through the waiting list.
Yeah, so exciting. And look, I'll use the word innovative, but in some ways it's just so obviously needed. Just to really, you know, is it innovation or should it have happened ages ago? And it's about just challenging the model of small chair, small table, one-to-one therapy and a scrapbook that the child takes home.
My word.
Those days, surely they're in the revision mirror, but you've kind of...
And that, you know, we've found incredible benefits, you know, from with our mealtime therapy pathway. We end up having these wonderful sessions where the allied health assistants go into the client's home and have 2 or 3 hours a week in there with them practicing these skills at mealtimes. There's no way that the family could afford a clinician there 3 hours a week. It's just not feasible. But it makes it accessible and it brings those skills into real life, because we all know 1 hour of therapy a week just isn't, it's not enough.
And I'm really wondering whether it's even ethical at times as well.
I hear you.
Tell me a little bit about how your beautiful customers are responding to this and the outcomes they're experiencing.
We actually came to market with this with lots of vigor and enthusiasm, and we're met with a combination of, oh, yes, let's do it, and, oh, I'm not sure.
That's not what we're used to.
Yes, that's right. It was such a challenge
for
them.
That's not what therapy looks like.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that's actually been a real wake-up call to us. We have had to do so much education through our socials and, you know, looking at interviewing our clinicians and doing blog posts and getting the allied health assistants up there on the website individually with their histories. And, you know, it's required a full website revamp. It's required a really keen look at our sales process, right from the application part of, you know, referral received, vetting the client to work out where they fit, how they work with it, and really working out, well, which part of the model will work best for them. Are they in a position where they have all the technology and the means at their home to just dial in? Or do they actually need an allied health assistant to arrive with all of the technology and connectivity and then support to teach them and support to connect them and then training people around them so that they can actually engage and bring it together? So ultimately it's been highly successful, and I can think of maybe 2 or 3 clients who have decided not to progress, you know, with a hybrid telehealth model, including allied health assistants, and who have insisted that that at the desk, small table, working hard has been the only way they'll go. But, you know, it's just been amazing. And it's been quite phenomenal to show power in bringing the allied health assistants along with us to assessments and to home visits and school visits. One way that we've been able to really get across the line lies with our adult community NDIS clients, where we have, for example, they're referred in for mealtime management. As a speech pathologist, you would normally rock up for your 10 hours of allocated funding and you would get the assessment done, you'd get the report done, and that'd be pretty much about it. But what we've
doesn't
been able
leave
to do,
much.
No, it really doesn't. And you know that you're going to go back next year and it will be the same thing over again. So yeah. We've been able to use a hybrid model where we've been able to take an allied health assistant with us and squeeze a dietitian in there as well. And the OT team has developed a beautiful screening tool that means we can go out there, the allied health assistant can administer the screening tool, speeches and dietitians can do their thing, and then we all come back into the office and the allied health assistant pulls it all together, drafts it, the clinicians assess it, vet it, analyse it, and then the report's sent out. So what incredible value for 10 hours for the client. And once that was identified by the market here, it's been jumped upon really quite, quite enthusiastically.
Yeah, a great example of trading, of rather than trading time for money, trading value for money.
Yeah.
And for professional clinicians to be thinking, how can I release, you know, the need to be controlling and there and doing whatever you do when you're in the room, how can I kind of get my clinical awesome out of my head into, you know, a really reputable form of intellectual property that others can use and share, but ultimate benefit for the client.
And the beautiful side of it is that we're seeing quick and rapid results with it, because we're seeing, a client came through the other day and I've worked with him now for nearly 7 years and it's been the same thing every single year. We go in for the review, nothing's changed. He needs a new wheelchair. His positioning's terrible. Mm. You know, he needs all these extra things. His weight has been a problem and causing pressure sores because of the wheelchair and the weight and all these complex things. And last year we did this process with them and it meant that we could actually say in our reports we've done an occupational therapy screen, dietetics assessment and a speech pathology assessment. This is what he needs and lo and behold, it got done. And we went out there and this fellow was just so happy. He was engaged. He was going back out into the community, going to restaurants in a comfortable chair, no pressure sores, just marvellous.
There's been a lot of commentary, I guess, globally, but we'll just stick to Aussie, about how clients, even students in schools, haven't been able to access schooling therapy support because of the compromised tech literacy. And this MyOT DNA just started lighting up from March because in use of technology is, I believe, an occupation. It wasn't an occupation, you know, 30 years ago when I was at uni. Oh, God, it was even further. But, you know, it's just part of how you engage in learning and life and socialization and so on and so forth. And it's, for me, it's not a reason to not provide service. It's just that little walnut that you start to crack. Well, how can we promote confidence and how can we get people opening the boxes and charging things up and clicking links and downloading this and starting to engage with it? You guys have, sounds as though the AHAs have had a role in promoting the occupation of using technology to connect.
Very much so. And because we have, you know, the fairly standard resistance to the expert, not the word, you know, but the expert swooping
whoever
in.
Whoever they are.
Yeah, that's right. Swooping in from the city and providing this information and just leaving. Having an allied health assistant who's actually local and based in that community and who can then follow up and teach and connect that person with some of the literacy and tech literacy supports in their local community through libraries and through state government innovations, you know, that's been invaluable. And it's been marvellous to see the change in the local communities and how well they've responded to it.
Yeah. I think the Telstra shops quietly may have been delighted when they had to close because I know how often my mum was in there with the iPad. And a lot of that can be done online with great task analysis up there in the clinician and the assistant's brain. You can really
coach them
through a lot of that. Yeah.
Yep, and we have built modules now that get sent out to our clients that run them through. This is what will happen. This is how it works. And here's a cheat sheet on what to do if there's a problem, so that we can start giving them self-empowerment, so they're not waiting on the allied health assistant to arrive to fix that for them. So, you know, it's been a learning curve for us, significant learning curve for us, but it's been amazing.
So given the year that was or is, still a bit more of it, how are you and Steve kind of dividing and conquering the to-do list or the to-don't list?
Well, we are extremely lucky to have fabulous managers in our departments, and we have a really collaborative and wonderful group that we can now delegate to and brainstorm with. And, you know, it's become quite good for them to have insight into more of the financials of the business, so that they can understand the impact of all of this. Kathy, you know us, we don't really necessarily divide and conquer. We just, it's very responsive on a day-to-day basis.
Bring it on.
We do what's needed, and that's what we do. But it has been a challenge for us to look at things through entrepreneurial glasses this year. It'd be easy to hide under the covers.
We
do really well.
A year of consolidation, that just breaks my entrepreneurial heart.
Me too. If you aren't moving forward, then you're moving backwards. And that's the issue. We are really good communicators. And so if something needs to be done, we talk about it, we allocate it, and we make sure it's done. And we have accountability. We have good systems in place to see which tasks need doing. We have really good financial tracking that's visible to the key staff members so that they know what needs doing. We actually had a really tight pressure point this year where our staff were just so overwhelmed with what was going on, not within the workplace at all, but globally. And keep in mind, there's no allied health schools in Tasmania, so we're all expats from somewhere. No one could go home to see their families. No one could do their usual holiday overseas. So they were, whilst we're very safe and very healthy and very lucky, they were really feeling it. And I feel like their usual understanding of, you know, appropriate billing and client attributable time as opposed to face-to-face time slipped quite significantly. So it was a beautiful example of the whole team pulling together to re-educate, support, and get that happening so that we didn't find ourselves in serious trouble. You know, when your figures drop by about 60%, you kind of freak out. Yeah. Even though we were all flat out and so many clients. We've had to be really onto it, and I think being open and honest with everybody on the team about where things are at this year has been a big, big shift for us. We normally just take care of things, and in the past the feedback has been from staff, we don't want to know about all the financials, you just deal with that, we just want to do our job. But this year, making sure that we can share enough to reassure and to build confidence has been quite a notable thing for them. They've responded well to it.
Dark soul of the night.
The money.
The necessary. How have you led the team this year?
I hope by being really forthright and honest. And one thing that we have done has been to be extremely clear with our messaging. We've had to look at not just the messaging that we're doing externally, but really looking at what copy we're writing internally as well, you know, and what we're saying to support and inspire and keep people focused. I have tackled it from the point of building mindset and culture, and that's been a big thing for us. So we've been doing a lot of work on psychological safety within the team and a lot of work on emotional literacy as well within the team, so that they can really engage well and feedback to us what they need to, so we can make it better for them. That's been something that we have pushed very strongly, and it's really starting to pay off, even though it's taken 6 months of hard graft to get it to that point. Our style of leadership has always been very collaborative. We're not dictators, and we certainly don't say this is the way we want it done. We always come to the party with the idea that the people on the ground who do the job are the best people to know what needs to be done and how it needs to be done. But sometimes they need the support to actually put their hand up and say, this is how it goes. And it's been challenging because there have been times through the year when nobody's been in a position to have the resilience to make those decisions. So at times we've had to step into a role of helping people to just be able to show up to work and not necessarily pushing the projects like we normally do. And, you know, project outcomes are one of our KPIs here. So we've had to actually pause that for a period during the year. It's back online now, but knowing that the team's well-being and psychological health was far, far greater than us trying to push projects forward. Didn't mean that Steve and I stopped working on it or the management team.
Yeah.
But it just meant that we changed our expectations.
Well, adjusted them to the context of grief and anxiety and fear and all of those stages that humans will move through sometimes on a daily basis, sometimes.
Hourly. Yes.
Yeah. And what I've heard as well from business owners is the fragility of team, understandably, but also the fragility of clients as well.
Yes. That's been a huge thing. And we've been very lucky to have had psychology come on board this year because, you know, that's been a huge, huge thing for us is, you know, we're all health professionals. We all understand it. But to actually distill mental health safety into what we need for our clients and for our staff is a big challenge.
Mm. Yeah. Describe, if you can, your who's in your management team? Who's around that table?
Okay, so obviously we have representation from every one of the disciplines that we see. So we have a speech manager, an OT manager, physio manager, yada yada. We also have our admin support team. They are represented by a team leader in the north and south who are quite stellar in what they know about how the interface works. We also have our allied health assistant manager. And whilst we've made the allied health assistant manager a clinician, we have put in two allied health team leaders. So allied health assistant team leaders, I should say, sorry. So the assistant team leaders are really, there's two positions. One's currently vacant up north, but down here we've got an amazingly experienced allied health assistant who really is she's a fantastic candidate for a leadership role, and she does the on-the-ground work with making sure her team is cohesive. We've got our financial advisor as well, our accountant and our bookkeeper, and they all come to the party when we have management meetings and when we're making these decisions. We also have a new addition to the team this year. We put on a sales role, contract manager. So his background has not been health at all. His background
is so much better with more than
business
health
people. Oh, absolutely. And I think that's why it works so well with having Steve and myself, you know, leading the leadership team, because we have very different perspectives on how things should be done. We challenge each other constantly, and that's hard, especially when you're married to the person. You have to juggle that and juggle those opinions. But because we have such a good respect for each other and where we come from, it's works really beautifully. But the introduction of our contract relationship management role has been amazing, because there gets to a point where you can't manage every single contract yourself and have good relationships with the different nursing homes, schools, group homes,
all the
community. Oh, my word. So,
let alone keep it consistent and quality driven.
That's right. And who talked to who last and who's doing what and who's quoted this or that.
Where's the sticky note? Yeah.
I know. Which notebook did I put that in? So having Sam on board's been really amazing, and it's good because now we have quite a balanced team where our management team is really split equally between clinical and business professionals. We call them the corporate crew. Everybody has a voice at the table, and it's just a a really wonderful thing to see that collaboration and to see with all the work we've been doing about that psychological safety that they can feel safe to challenge each other and to actually bring ideas to the table and, you know, rock the status quo. We don't do that at all down here.
No rocking of status quo at all that I've ever seen.
No.
But it's also about establishing a code of conduct for that kind of entity as well, that there is psychological safety, but not to the point that it hampers creativity and radical thinking and, you know, the risk management question coming in as well. So it does need a very, very set tone. Is that what you've discovered?
Yes, it does. And we're really lucky because we actually have very experienced and natural leaders who all think quite similarly to how Steve and I think. So we've found the right people, and that's been key, because we didn't have the right people when we started doing this. They were wonderful people, but they have to, you know, there's a person for every job, and you have to find the right fit for your culture. It's not a mark of disrespect at all to not be the right fit for someone's team culture. But now that we've found that, we have been blown away by the progress. So it definitely has been an exercise in understanding that. And we have lots and lots of work around our strategy days and our planning, and we communicate that really clearly to our staff at all levels as to what has happened, and they get the opportunity to be involved. So it creates an unspoken code of conduct, but also quite a clear alignment with our values.
Yeah. Good to hear that there are strategy days. So many businesses try and kind of crunch out the strategy in an hour here and an hour there, and then that one gets cancelled, and then there's 90 minutes because it's September the 30th or whatever it is. Strategy takes a ton of time.
Yeah. It might be called a strategy day, but, Kathy, I spend about a week on it beforehand. It's huge. Yeah. So we actually survey from the ground up. We survey our clients, our stakeholders, and make sure that our clinicians all have their goals and their passions reflected. I truly believe that's the way we've grown. This business is – I didn't come into it with any preconceived ideas about what I wanted it to be. Where it's grown into, the areas that it's grown into, has come very directly from the staff's passions and supporting them to achieve their goals, which has been great because now they don't leave because they're happy and they have career progression here, which is great. It's hard. Staff retention's hard, but that's addressing it quite well. Yeah. But look, I do
think... Would you bring a client or a stakeholder into your leadership team?
We do, in the sense that we hold... what do we call them? I've had a mind blank.
That's all right.
It's Tuesday mid-morning.
as opposed to any other day.
Thought. So we invite them in and we do a survey.
Consulting group.
Yeah, so the process is...
Consultative process, great.
Yes. So we get the staff to put together what they want out of the next year, and then we get the clients to do the same process, and then all of that is brought to the management table. As of yet, we haven't brought a client in to the actual table for the strategy day. It's certainly something we talked about at the last meeting, but we felt that it was hard to get, because of the diversity of our population, it was really hard to get somebody that would reflect and represent some of our consumers, because it is so varied. So having the different focus groups gave us more of a broad scope about what they would like to see achieved. Yeah. And then the feedback's given out to the clients, and our strategy and vision document that we produce is published through our socials to allow people to read it. And see if they, you know, they get the opportunity to comment.
Oh, love it, love it, love it. How are your new rooms going?
Which ones?
Let's go with Hobart first.
Hobart's been great. We've been in here for 7 months now. And
I was thinking that.
Yeah, it's just been phenomenal. So we renovated a whole premises. We bought a block of offices and renovated it up. It's interesting how much the team's changed in that time, because the space, I would have designed it very differently if I'd known this time last year, well, actually this time 2 years ago when we were designing, what we'd be doing and what 2020 would have thrown at us. I would have designed this space very differently. But we're adapting, and you know, like I said, we've gone through and installed these big screen computers to do assisted telehealth all the way through, and change the communal space to be COVID safe, and like, yeah, you just roll with it, don't you? And
have you been out of them yet?
Well, yes, of course, that was the plan. But it's a planned growing out of them. So we opened Patterson Street in Launceston on the 1st of July, right in the middle of COVID, and we weren't even allowed to travel up to help prepare it. So it was this massive deal with staff on the ground, video calling us through these properties looking for the right property to sort out. So we have a lovely space up there with 5 rooms. It's been a great success, right in the centre of the city there. But the way that we've outgrown it has been to go out into rural areas with staff on the ground. And our staff have always had laptops, phones and connectivity so they can work from anywhere. So we encourage people when they're on their, it's a huge job to timetable all this, but we encourage staff when they're on their telehealth or off-site days, they don't come in, they stay at home and they, you know, work from home. So it's been amazing. If you'd asked me 5 years ago how many staff could you fit into a 6-roomed practice, I would have said, I don't know, maybe 10?
6.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. But now, you know, we run 50 staff across, well, what is it, you know, 11 rooms.
The business needs to be bigger than the rooms.
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, you can't fill them and you can't, you know, make the return on investment. Yeah. The bricks and mortar are extremely pricey for the value that you can give the client.
Yeah,
I think the clients over time will move away from needing to see the security of bricks and mortar as being coalescent with healthcare of quality. But we're not there yet.
Absolutely. It's on the way, though. It's on the way.
Rapidly.
And look, nothing like a pandemic to give a bit of a rocket on what good service looks like, or what creative, innovative, effective service looks like, and, you know, the 101 ways to achieve outcomes.
Yeah, that's right.
What's in the crystal ball for the next 12 months?
Secrets. Secrets.
No, I'm not expecting secrets. Just
extraordinary.
Crazy.
Yeah. So we've got, you know, obviously we want to expand our network of allied health assistants, and, you know, really we've got some extraordinary staff on the horizon coming our way. So it will allow for, you know, ages ago you and I talked about the concept of destination employment. Well, look, I feel like we're doing quite well with that, because we don't really have to advertise that much anymore. We have people lining up once the borders reopen to come. So
don't start. You're not in Melbourne, Holly. We're not going to talk about borders.
I hear you. I'm really sorry. but it is really challenging with that. But what's really exciting for us is we always like to be on the front foot. We really do. And so we have a fabulous project around digitized healthcare that's coming, and I can't wait to launch that. So that's not far away. It's a huge thing, and I think it will be so wonderful for people who really are struggling with the challenge of accessing healthcare since the introduction of the juggernaut of NDIS into our private market.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to come back onto the podcast later in the year and early next and give us some juice on that one when you're ready. Yeah. What else?
Absolutely.
What else is in the crystal ball?
You, I think, Kathy, would probably know that we don't have a formal business plan and never have had. It is something that we really like to be open to opportunities. So the direction that we're going is really looking at how we hone value for our clients and how we can keep innovating and keep doing interesting things for our staff so they stay passionate and connected to their community and to their professions. Our real strength is that we respond to opportunity. So I can't really say what does the crystal ball hold beyond the big projects that will take us to next level and allow for something a bit more than Tasmanian domination. Not that we
global, you know. Global. What needs to flavor a business plan is intention and spirit and responsivity and curiosity. And while it's interesting and cool for some business owners to have numbers and metrics and tightly defined stuff, there are lots of ways to be entrepreneurial, and you've got to kind of find your groove a bit, I reckon.
Yep, I think so. And we are really, really looking to scale up what we do with our responsive on-demand health services. So we have some really cool stuff in the pipeline for that that will really flavour the opportunities that we take. And I think for us, the intention has always been to keep diversity of our market so that we don't have narrowed income streams. So for that, with that in mind, we have, you know, a few really cool things going on the ground down here in Tasmania with health collaboration and different ways of getting primary healthcare up and running. So we are trying to position ourselves quite heavily to get involved with those community development models. So that'll be really interesting to see what plays out with that.
Yeah. And how are you and Steve kind of living your lifestyle? I know you have other passions and interests outside of business. Every time I see anything about honey and bees, I think of your kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
How's life rolling out around the business?
Really delicately at the moment. Really delicately. We, like everybody else, are finding new ways of staying connected. We're not able to involve our kids as much as we would like in our extended family at the moment. So it's a challenge. But, you know, as you know, we have a little permaculture orchard, and we did the tree change thing, as most people in Tassie tend to do at some point. And so that for us has been a huge area of passion. We're finding that having our own little island has been a real godsend, you know, for us in this current climate, because apart from the lack of travel, our lifestyle hasn't changed too much. But running the extended business model, shall I say, with the next project in mind, has been a huge drain. But it is something that we have each other's backs on, and we always seem to be able to commit to really well, knowing that one of us is going to be super busy for a period and then it swaps. So the kids are used to it. It's been like that since they were born. So they're pretty good. And they love being involved in this sort of stuff. So it's good. They have insight into how challenging things have been. And I couldn't ask for better kids, really. But they're really growing, my goodness. Luca's as tall as I am now, so Jean's not far behind. And those boys, they love their rural farming kind of lifestyle. They're really into their junior beekeeping still, and try to balance that, you know, time between their needs for sport and connection and community and their safety and their health at the moment.
With everything else. Yeah.
We're all rising to the challenge, aren't we? You know, we've got to take a minute to say, even if we're not getting it right, we are rising to the challenge.
And learning fast and failing fast and learning from that as well.
Yep. Well, really, all I've done is buy their love this year. I bought them two kittens.
Oh,
I know.
Ninja parent move. Oh, ninja.
Smooth. I can get away with anything right now. It's great. But they're lovely little kittens.
Oh, gorgeous, gorgeous. Alrighty, how about you have the last final word? What would you like to leave listeners thinking about?
I think I would like people to really challenge themselves about the reasons why they are putting things on hold. Why, what values, what core values are you holding on to that are stopping you from really trying to push what you're doing into new domains? Because we are in a position of great change. It is easy to get scared. But this is a time when if we really focus on letting go of all of the 200-year-old models we've been working with, and really, you know, as much as we respect what we learnt when we were 20 years ago in uni, I was definitely not that old. I'm not that old, no.
But, yeah, you know, I am, so just keep going.
No, I'm being facetious, I am too. but, yeah, those of us who are more we have the benefit of hindsight, Kathy. I think it's really important to not get hung up on your internal values. So don't let this year hold you back. Take risks and do it knowing your own reservations and knowing why you're feeling those reservations. That's the only thing I can say. I'm not sure that it's working for me. We certainly have had on paper financial benefit from taking those risks right now, you know, but I would suggest that the proof will be in the pudding over the next 4 or 5 years for those that dared and those that didn't.
Yeah, I totally agree. We're going to see the results of risk and dare, great daring and courage. Yeah, I'd say 18, 24 months minimum onwards.
Yeah, I think so.
Well done, guys. Well done, Holly. Well done, Steve. You're not on the call, but you're not far away.
He's not. He's lurking.
I see.
Yes. But thank you so much.
Does he want to come and say hello?
He's gone. Thanks for saying that. No, he's around, but he's, as always, he says he has a face for radio. So he's quite happy to sit in the background.
Thank you for coming on and sharing the adventure so far. And let's make sure we do a part two sometime soon.
That'd be wonderful. Thanks so much for your time, Kathy.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues. The Private Practice Made Perfect podcast is brought to you by Experts on Air Podcast Network.